I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Cougars by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts,
Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
What's up, Cougar Nation, and welcome into another edition of Cougar Sports Saturday. Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper will be talking BYU sports all day long. 156 years ago, on June 19th, 1865, enslaved African Americans in Galveston, Texas were first told they were freed, and we'll be talking about Juneteenth all throughout the program. In hour number three, we've got a special edition Juneteenth commentary from players and coaches. You won't want to miss that coming up at 2:30, so we'll have you covered all day long. Me and Mitch were down at BYU Media Day earlier in the week, so we got stuff from Kalani Sitake today, Isaac Rex, James Empey. Going to be a jam-packed show, Mitch.
It really is. I'm excited about this, Matt. BYU Football Media Day was fantastic on Thursday. We'll have a lot to discuss from that, what we heard, what we saw, a lot to get to there. But first things first, though, we got to get a little bit of a therapy session there out there for our BYU and Jazz fans. We'll start things off in the leadoff.
The leadoff. A look at the stories making headlines right now. It's time for the leadoff on Cougar Sports Saturday.
The Utah Jazz blew a 25-point lead last night, Mitch, and they lost to the Clippers 4-2, and in Game 6, they lost 131-119. They gave up 81 points in that second half, and we know that there's strong ties between BYU fans and Jazz fans, and normally we wouldn't dip into this pool, but to me, this just feels like an enormously missed opportunity by the Jazz. No Kawhi Leonard in Game 5 and 6. You can't win either of those games. There's injuries on the East, on the Eastern Conference. We don't know what Chris Paul's availability is going to be in the Western Conference. It just seems like an unbelievable missed opportunity for the Jazz.
Yeah, it really is. And this was the year for where everything kind of opened up. You know, you wonder what could have been had Donovan Mitchell been healthy, had Mike Conley been fully healthy. But every other team was injured, too. I mean, you lost to a Clippers team there where Terrence Mann goes off for 39 points. I'm like, huh? Like, what? Terrence Mann? From Florida State, he's the guy that won the game for the Clippers. Like, it's pretty crazy to think. And to think that this Jazz team, the number one seed, the best record in the league, doesn't get to the conference finals, it's a missed opportunity. And Jazz, likely, I would imagine, will have coverage on KSLSports.com. Locker cleanout probably going to be taking place today. Exit interviews. So it's going to be an interesting offseason. It's going to be the first year with Ryan Smith overseeing an offseason. What type of approach will he take? As if it was the old Miller regime, you'd just basically say they're going to run it back. Everything is coming back, but Ryan Smith seems like he might be a little more aggressive potentially. And obviously Ryan Smith, a diehard BYU fan, he had BYU associate AD Brian Santiago sitting next to him down in LA at the Staples Center last night. I saw that, thought that was kind of cool. And so it's going to be an interesting offseason for the Utah Jazz, but definitely a missed opportunity. And Jazz fans and BYU fans out there, this is a safe space. You can share your thoughts with us from last night's game on the UCCU KSL text line 57500. But we also ask on our poll of the day today, which you can also text us your thoughts. It got us thinking, Matt, and maybe, you know, we know that you love to dive into these horrific BYU losses. So this is kind of like in your wheelhouse. What collapse in BYU sports history is the equivalent of the Jazz blowing a 25-point lead against the Clippers last night? Here are the options. BYU versus Ole Miss in the Big Dance back in 2015. That was bad. The Hawaii football game in 2001. Remember, BYU was undefeated that season. You could go with other, or what's currently leading, BYU versus Utah 2018. That is running away with things right now. It's 70% of the vote, and I have a feeling Cougar Nation's going to side with that one.
I voted for other, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
What'd you pick?
I picked a different BYU versus Utah loss. Now,
okay.
I know that BYU blew a huge lead in 2018, but that was the circumstances around that game were bizarre. There was a lot of injuries. It was at the end of the year. Utah was getting ready to play in the Pac-12 championship game. So were they looking past? To me, I factored all that in. For me, it's 2016. I know that BYU didn't blow a huge lead.
Okay.
But when you force, what was it, five or six turnovers?
Six.
When you force six turnovers and barely lead, and then you have to mount a two-minute drive to even tie the football game. I just feel like in any scenario, if you say you're playing your rival, it's early in the year, both teams are at full strength, you've got a chance to snap the streak, if you're going to force six turnovers, are you going to win that football game? You would say yes 100 times out of 100, and you'd say we win by double-digit points. And never at no point in that football game were they in control. I remember early in that game, I think Troy Williams threw an interception or fumbled it, and BYU went backwards, and they had to settle for a field. Like, they were in scoring position when they got the football. No, it was Joe Williams' fumble, excuse me. And they go backwards, and they have to settle for a field. That one still haunts me, because when you watch it, you're like, everything is going BYU's way after that pick six. After that, everything went BYU's way. They have Taysom Mills scampers down the sideline, big touchdowns. And I never felt like they were going to win that football game, even though you forced six turnovers. So for me, it's like, that's that one. 2018 is a great answer, don't get me wrong, but that 2016 one, I just feel like, man, because we talk so often, BYU's got to win the turnover battle. Well, they win the turnover battle and they lose the football game.
Yeah, it's funny when you think about it that way, but I mean, yeah, Jake Oldry, that game, I remember they resorted to him so many times, and he was awesome.
Yep.
But they were settling for field goals, they weren't capitalizing. That is a good pick, but I side with the masses here, 2018, just because you're up 20-0, and then Utah has that pick six, and you're like, uh-oh,
yep,
here comes the meltdown. But then they answer.
27-7.
Yeah, then it goes 27-7, but then Matt Hadley gets hurt at running back, who was
huge
out of nowhere, just like this stud running back for BYU, picking up the tough yardage. Then Isaiah Kafusi got hurt in that game. It was just a collapse, and you're thinking, when is it going to end for BYU? Like Jason Shelley. Yeah, Jason Shelley. Like, think about that. The quarterbacks that have beaten BYU in this stretch.
Disgusting.
You go John Hayes, Jason Shelley. You're like, what? Like, why can't anything break BYU's way? Like, BYU had Taysom Hill in 2016. They had Zach Wilson in 2018.
They have two NFL starting caliber quarterbacks.
And they lost to Troy Williams and Jason Shelley. Are you kidding me? Like, that just adds more salt to the wound when you think about it that way. But the BYU Ole Miss in 2015 basketball was
that
pretty good. But I got to go with BYU Utah 2018. Because imagine if BYU gets that game. Like, just everything kind of resets. Like, you just got to get one.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing for BYU at this point. That's why the 2021 game is going to be magnified. And we got some commentary about the rivalry game at Media Day. We'll share some thoughts on that, what we heard from players and coaches. But you just got to get one eventually, because then I feel like it just takes this big, boulder off your shoulders, and you just kind of move on, and everything can be all reset, and BYU can kind of just play loose in the rivalry. It feels like as the years go by and this losing streak continues to mount, pile up, there's just more and more pressure on BYU to try to win a game, and they maybe tend to overthink it a little bit, whereas Utah just continues to pile up the victories, and they're going to be looking for their 10th straight victory this September. If BYU doesn't win this fall, we'll be looking at, for BYU, up to a 15-year drought, because the next time the two teams play is 2024, so... Yeah, 2016, 2018, those were some definitely difficult losses for BYU.
Of course, we're putting this into perspective as we just kind of open up the texts, the tweets about the Jazz blowing a 2-0 lead and more importantly, blowing a 25-point lead early in the third quarter.
Yeah, and speaking of the Jazz, too, I saw a crazy stat. They're one of only three teams that have blown two-game leads in back-to-back years. The others... The Clippers in 2015 and 16, and the Phoenix Suns in 93 and 94, 94 and 95. So,
And I believe it's the largest blown lead in an elimination game as
yeah,
well.
That's so right.
In the think about that. In the history of the NBA, that's the largest blown lead. And
they lost by double digits, too.
I was just going to say, they lost by 12. So it was a 37-point swing. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. The fact that the Jazz darn near blew the 25-point lead in one quarter, too, in the third quarter. It was just a insane collapse. And it's going to have a lot of questions. I know Jazz fans, because we see a lot of Jazz Twitter with BYU fans, because there's a huge overlap. You know, a lot of BYU fans love the Jazz here locally, and I think some people are pointing towards Rudy Gobert as the blame. I look more at Quinn Snyder for the blame, because I thought he got completely outcoached by a guy like Ty Lue, who I thought in the first series, in the first round against the Mavs, I thought the Mavs were the head and shoulders the better team. But hey, Ty Lue, credit to him. When his team gets a lead in a series, they close it out. He's 12-1 now in closeout games. Big credit to LeBron James. But Ty Lue, pretty dang good as a coach, I guess, when it comes to getting those closeout wins. Had that 3-1 comeback with the Golden State against the Golden State Warriors a few years back. So that was a frustrating collapse by the Utah Jazz, because it just felt like once Kawhi went down, they're in the finals. Yep. And Chris Paul's in COVID protocol. The path was cleared for the Jazz to get back to the NBA Finals, and now we're talking about them having locker cleanout. Pretty insane. Like, usually locker cleanout used to have a kitty corner. They go to Crown Burger and pick up the burgers at Crown Burger. They're not doing that anymore. I don't know where they get their food takeout anymore on locker cleanout day, but very early exit for the Jazz. Very surprising, to be honest with you.
I'm probably with you about the Quinn blame. It's hard because you look at the end of that bench and you're like, maybe there was nowhere to go because Niang was no good in this series.
Why didn't Clarkson play? Like, the guy was on fire, and then he's just MIA in the second half. Like, where's he at? What's going on here?
Yeah, here's why I blame Rudy. Two things. Number one, you've got to be an offensive threat. When teams go small, you have to be able to neutralize, because you can't expect Rudy to defend the three. That's not what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to defend the rim, and they're bringing him out. So his rim protection, I didn't think was very good, but I'm not going to blame him for that, because he was brought out to the 3-point line. But you got to be able to punish them on the other end. When Batum is guarding you, when Morris is guarding you, that's got to be an automatic 2 points, or very worst, score a couple times. So then they think about double teaming you, and then you kick it out to the shooters. That never happened. And then the other thing that I think was difficult to watch, not a good enough rebounder. When you're that big and you're playing against a small team, if they miss the shot, it should be one and done. And that just was not the case for Utah, and I think a lot of that falls on Rudy.
You can text us 57500 at the UCCU KSL text line. What would you say is BYU's equivalent to the biggest collapse in BYU sports history compared to the Jazz 25-point collapse last night in LA? We'll talk about that more. But also, BYU Media Day news and notes coming up next. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. It's 12:20 p.m. on this Saturday, June 19th. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte with you. And 2 days ago, we were down in Provo at BYU Football Media Day. And I got to say, Matt, it felt so good to be back in person, look people face to face. I loved it, because you got to go back to March 12th, the first day after everything pretty much shut down. BYU had a Zoom call with Mark Pope the moment that the NCAA tournament was canceled. And ever since March 12th, it's all been Zoom calls. So for those out there listening that maybe don't know the media protocols, that's what we've been doing pretty much the past 15 months. And better than nothing. Like, I'm very appreciative of BYU having those Zoom calls, because they could have easily said, you know what, we're just shutting it down completely. But just having that interaction face-to-face, it was great, because you just – It's a different level of conversation, too. Like, there's just more personality, and it's more fun. It was just great, and it felt like, in that moment, like, life was kind of back to normal, and that felt good.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's fun to have, as you mentioned, the interviews are great, and we're going to have you covered for the rest of summer. I mean, we have some great interviews for you starting next segment. We got Kalani Sitake. We've got tons of coaches and players. But that conversation beforehand, you don't get. You know, Aaron Roderick telling us a story about losing a tire on the freeway.
Yeah.
You don't
get scary stuff, too.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, I'm driving to work, and my tire blows out, and I have to cross, like, 7 lanes of traffic. You know, you don't get that kind of stuff. Being able to talk to Jaren Hall about getting ready to have his first kid and what that means for him and his family. You don't have that opportunity to get to know people, and you know, huge credit to Brett Pine and Duff Tittle and all of BYU, John McBride, for putting that together, because that was a risk, by the way. We need to, this is one of the first opportunities where we've had been able to do that in a sports function, and so I felt so good, and we have a lot of great stuff for
it. We do, and you know, there was a lot of talking points at storylines that I thought emerged at BYU Football Media Day. Nothing groundbreaking. Like, it wasn't anything program altering, like scheduling announcements or conference realignment. But one big thing that maybe you could say was program altering, it doesn't really fire up the fan base, I think, but for people inside the program, the players, it's a big deal if they want to kick the tires and look at that avenue, and that's the Built for Life program. Kalani Sitake and Tom Homo created this for all student athletes, and it really coincides with Name, Image, Likeness 1, but that's a small piece of it. Players now also have the opportunity to start nonprofits, or not for, or, you know, nonprofits, and they can start organizations that and charities that help out their communities and things that mean a lot to them. And it's all funneled through this Built for Life program, that which is tied in with the Silicon Slopes and the Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce. It's a really cool deal. And when the day comes when the NCAA eventually allows student athletes to make money off their name, image, likeness, BYU now is going to have a system in place where players are going to be able to look at those avenues and find ways to make money. So it's a really cool deal for BYU players. It's not, I think, anything big for fans. Like, I don't think it really gets them excited, but it's definitely big for the players and the coaches.
I love what athletic director Tom Homo said in the State of the Program. He said there's too many kids across the country that get used up in football. That's not going to happen to BYU when talking about the Built for Life program. And what I think is so interesting is, look, I have been someone for the entirety of my 2+ years on the show who have said that athletes should be able to make money off their name. It just makes total sense to me, and I'm glad that we're moving that direction. I think one of the more underrated parts of Built for Life, as I understand it, because the word we heard a lot with it is its flexibility, meaning it can transform to be what it needs to be based on what the rules are determined to be by the NCAA. But I love the fact that there's going to be education about life after football.
Sure.
Because even when I went to college, Mitch, there wasn't enough education about work, how to work, like how to, what's the proper etiquette for sending emails. I know that sounds crazy, but that was never taught to me. You know, that's been learned on the job, like balancing a budget, like finances, managing your time, internships, all that kind of stuff. Like, you had to be proactive in college to do that. And for those who did, and they went on to succeed, and for the ones that did not go on to play professional football, because Kalani Sitake, he mentioned this, Mitch, where it's like all these kids want to play in the NFL, they're just not going to. Like, that's the reality. How do we prepare them for life after football? This is going to do that. So I think that's really exciting for all student athletes, where they're going to walk into a job day one and they're going to be much further ahead than they were right now.
Yep. BYU has made a huge focus this offseason on the player experience, and Billy Nixon, the equipment manager, but also player experience director, they've even had all the players update their LinkedIn profile photos.
That's a big deal.
Connect with individuals in the Silicon Slopes. That does matter. It's a big deal, and I think I don't think it's going to be anything that's going to be groundbreaking per se for opening up new recruiting paths, but if something like name, image, likeness is a big deal to a potential recruit, BYU is in a position where they've got the resources and the tools to offer the best of the best to these potential student athletes. But by no means is this suddenly going to be, oh, BYU is now going to be getting 4- and 5-star recruits. No, like it's BYU's still going to get their guys. I mean, you hope that the on-field product then elevates the caliber of the recruits. If you can consistently have those 9, 10, 11-win seasons and get more guys to the league, that's going to get you more doors open with the 4-star recruits. But I think that what's also notable with BYU's program, and I came away with this from talking to some of the players and the coaches, is that Kalani Sitake is clearly secure right now in his role as the head football coach. You don't have the leash and the luxury to be able to spend the time to carve out this name, image, likeness program if you're having struggles on the field. When you come off an 11-1 season, you produce 5 guys in the NFL, and also you're not having a mass exodus to the transfer portal. You have guys that want to stay part of the BYU experience. Kalani Sitake has the support of the administration, and they see his vision for what he wants for BYU football. And I think it's created a situation where we're seeing more support given to BYU sports than I think I've ever seen in my lifetime. And I think that's a great thing as BYU continues to grow and tries to achieve more as an independent going forward in this unique landscape of college sports.
I'm glad you bring that up, because I felt the same way. Just an immense comfort from the coaching staff. And I love the role that Kalani's playing now, because before I feel like he was more involved with the X's and O's and with the game. And he still is. I'm not saying he's not. But he's taking more – he's becoming more of a Lavelle Edwards, where you're kind of the CEO. You're overseeing the program. And I think that's a great place to be, because a lot of these programs that are great – and by no means am I comparing BYU to an Alabama or a Clemson – but those coaches oversee the program.
Yep.
They're not plugging holes with coordinators and position coaches and game plans. They're able to focus on creating a culture and a vision, which there's no doubt that Kalani Sitake has. And now you can kind of manage from afar. And what a luxury it is for BYU, too, to have an experienced coaching staff, because this hasn't always been the case with Kalani Sitake. Guys that have been there multiple years know what BYU is about. And then you bring in some experienced guys like Kevin Kloon and Daryl Funk. We had a chance to catch up with Coach Kloon, and we'll play that later in the summer, where he said, "I never thought I'd be here because I coached against BYU for so often, but I'm surprised at how much I enjoy working here. It's been a blast to work with these coaches and with these players." So there's just a great camaraderie, a great culture going on at BYU right now, which I think will help foster more winning seasons.
And you'll hear from the man that's creating that culture, Kalani Sitake, coming up next. We got news, traffic, and weather, and then we got to take this break, and then you'll hear from Kalani Sitake, the head football coach of the BYU program, coming up next. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Covers by 20!
Every Saturday. Year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio, your legacy home of the BYU Cougars. It's June 19th, Saturday afternoon, another week closer to BYU football being back and facing the Arizona Wildcats. Cannot wait for the 2021 season to open up, and we're excited now to discuss more about that 2021 season with the face of the BYU football program, the head man of the Cougars. He is Kalani Sitake. Kalani, how you doing, man? How's your offseason treating you?
Really well. Yeah, I mean, the fact that we're doing media interviews and got media day and got all that stuff going just means that the season's right around the corner, and just really looking forward to it. I'm just excited to get this season underway, and just really thankful that we get to keep playing this game.
And you've dabbled in some golf. I heard from Fessy Sitake that you got to go to Pebble Beach.
Yeah,
par 3. What was that like? That's got to be fun.
Well, I mean, I don't know if my golf skills really qualify for me to be there on Pebble Beach. Fessy's a much better golfer than I am, but the Coaches Classic was something that Lavelle was a big part of, and he helped organize that with other coaches like Dick Tomey and other coaches in the past that started, I mean, 30 years ago. And so just to be a part of it, Lavelle really wanted me, when I got the head job, he wanted me to be a part of that Coaches Classic, and it's a cool fraternity to be a group of, have our wives connect and talk to other head coaches' wives. That's a huge benefit to have them collect data and compare. And so it's been really cool, but also to get some of the mentoring from a lot of the head coaches, and some of them are our opponents. But it's a really cool moment, not because of the golf, but because of the camaraderie and the connection that we can have with others. And I think Lavelle, I get it, why he wanted me to be there, and it kept things in perspective, and I'm really thankful that that's something that I could be a part of.
Kalani, you're heading into your sixth season as the head man here at BYU. How do you feel what's the state of the program? How are you feeling about this upcoming season going into your sixth year?
Yeah, I really feel good about the program, but I feel good about the program ever since I was little. I mean, I've always been a BYU fan, so you know, then I got to play under Lavelle Edwards, and so I've always kept an eye on how the program's doing and seeing it go with Coach Croton and seeing it go with Bronco Mendenhall, and now I'm here as a head coach. It's like it's a dream come true. But I think before I was a coach or a player at BYU, I was a fan. And so the goal is for me to try to keep the fans happy, and that's the task. And for me, I find it rewarding and exciting to do. So I don't know about if I can talk when you say in regards to the state of the program. I don't know what that means because people want to limit it to wins and losses. Then I look at the things that we've done as a program and as a unit, and how many lives have been influenced by the program, and that to me matters more than anything. And then I know my job as head coach is to win games, but the rewarding part of it is that we get to do so many other things like serve others and express our gratitude and our love by the way we play, but then also connect with things in regards to the gospel of Jesus Christ.
BYU head football coach Kalani Sitake is our guest, and I know that the wins and losses are not the end-all, be-all, but after an 11-1 season, man, that was a special year a season ago, regardless of what national talking heads would say, you know, the schedule this, schedule that, but it's like the fact that you played 12 games and then won 11 of them, that was quite the special year. Where can the program improve from such a, you know, accomplished season that garnered national headlines? Where can you guys improve, you feel?
I think the simplest way to answer that question is the goal is for us to play at our best. I don't think we did that every week last year. And so the goal is to make sure that we get that done 12 times this year in hopes of earning another game. And so I don't know if I were to look back at the last year's each game by game, I would say definitely there are two that we could have played better in. But there are, if you look in a little bit more detail, there's probably some quarters and some drives that we wish we could have back. And so the goal for us as a staff is to find a way that we can put our players in position to be at their best. And we've addressed that. We've started to work towards that in spring ball. And so I like where we're headed. And like Lavelle used to say, you know, we have a pretty good chance of being good right now.
The big news for Media Day, Kalani, was the Built for Life program. We know you spent a lot of time on that. And you've talked about it a lot as well, but what's one or two big takeaways from that do you think will really help the current players and future players here at BYU?
Well, I think that it's flexible, meaning that the name, image, and likeness isn't set in stone yet. And it's probably going to go through a lot of changes in the upcoming years. And so we wanted something that an initiative that could help our players educate them in regards to money and business and everything that comes along, but receive the mentoring from powerhouse economy that the state of Utah has, and especially in Utah Valley. And so when the timing of it all worked out, the data that we collected with Gary Verone and with Billy Nixon and with John Swift, those guys collecting the data with our support staff, were able to find that this is something, the Built for Life is actually something that all student athletes were hoping for and want. And so the initiative is to have something in place that can deal with whatever comes our way with name, image, and likeness, but then also educate our players with partnerships that we have, with the big power partnerships that we have, and put them in a position to have success outside of football. I mean, I'm sure football, everybody wants to go to the NFL. Governor Herbert said it himself that not everyone can do that. So this allows them to think about their future and put them in a position where they can really start working and being involved with the economy that's thriving. So you know, I mean, it's thriving really, really well right now in the state.
I've always respected, Kalani, your passion for the game of football. You said, like, you know, whenever you see a bowl game on TV, you're tuning into it if you got the time, and you just love the game of football, regardless of what level it is. And I'm curious. College football is seeing a big potential change in going to a 12-game playoff, which is crazy to think, because when you were playing, the thought of playoff would have been like a swear word to the powers that be in this sport. And to think there could be a 12-team playoff, it's pretty remarkable. How do you feel, just as maybe a one football fan, but the head coach at BYU, what do you think of a proposed 12-team playoff?
It just shows that the NCAA is committed to doing things right and getting things better, and that I think they've always tried to do it in the rules and the regulation of the game and trying to keep people healthy and avoid injury, right, especially with the helmet-to-helmet contact, stuff like that. But now this is really inclusive and allowing other teams to have a chance of winning a national championship. When you limit it to four, it doesn't really open it to very many teams, including all the Power Five teams. And so now when you go, the fact that they're looking to add more means that they're looking to include others, which means that everybody should have a chance. Right now, any head coach in FBS should feel confident that they have a chance to win a national championship, and you couldn't really say that before.
Kalani Sitake, the head coach of BYU football, is our guest here on Cougar Sports Saturday. I think it would be okay to ask some football-related questions, Coach.
Yes,
one question that you're going to get asked over and over again, we know there's not an answer, is the quarterback battle, the ongoing quarterback battle, and that will play itself out come fall camp. Is there a time you'd like someone to emerge, or are you guys comfortable with that going all the way up until kickoff against Arizona?
Well, I don't like deadlines. And there's one deadline that matters, and that's the first game. And so so we already have that deadline in place. I don't think we should try to create another one. I just feel like that causes an opportunity for deadlines not to be met, and then also for you to make the wrong decisions. And so this is an important decision for our football program, and the three young men deserve a fair shot at showing why they should be the guy. And so whenever it starts to show itself, I think we'll know. I mean, we've been through quarterback battles before. Even Zach was involved in one, too. And so we'll see how it goes, and we'll see how A-Rod feels about everything, how Fessy feels about it, and go from there. But I think that there's so many different variables that can go into it. All I know is that there's a lot of great players for them to throw to and to hand the ball off to. So that should be a lot of fun for those quarterbacks.
Having a revival of the BYU quarterback position, I got to imagine a lot of alums probably reached out to you or just beyond thrilled, not only with the wins, but just knowing that BYU had a big-time quarterback once again. Have former players and your teammates over the years reached out and just maybe expressed their support of the job you're doing and just their excitement for the quarterback position kind of being revived once again at BYU?
Yeah, it just feels right. You know what I mean? So I think I've spoken to a lot of alumni and people that are really invested in our program, and that's a lot of fun. But I think it just feels like it's supposed to be like that, where our quarterback is a guy that plays here and then goes on to the NFL. That's if we can continue to do that, then that's a good sign for us as a program. And it's a good sign. I feel I've been saying this. You've been hearing me talk about it for many years. That I feel like there's a lot of talent on this team, a lot of NFL talent. And I think that if we can keep developing our players the right way and keep giving them the right resources to allow them to thrive and get better mentally and physically and even spiritually, then I think that we're going to start to unlock some big-time treasures and talent, and you're going to see that even reflected in the next level. So I'm really excited about what's going to happen here and the expectation that we have from our program. But it's a expectation that our players have of themselves, and that's accomplishing great things. I'm really excited about the individual part of it and then how collectively how they're working as a unit.
He's BYU head coach Kalani Sitake. More with him after the break. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. Welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio, 12:52 p.m. here on June 19th, they were talking with BYU head football coach Kalani Sitake. And Kalani, it's a unique year this season because the free COVID year last year, where eligibility pretty much took a pause. And, it begs the question, how many scholarship players do you guys actually have in the program? Is it over the 85 scholarship amount? Do you have more this year?
And it's exciting times right now because they got they were granted an extra year if they wanted to come back, and a few guys did decide to come back that were seniors. So I'm curious, Kalani, usually there's an 85 scholarship limit. Is that over that with guys like Uriah coming back? How many scholarship players do you have on this year's roster?
Yeah, with Uriah and Capisi, we can go over the number by those two. So But everyone else can do that. But you're only allowed a certain amount of roster spots. And so
like Samson Nakua doesn't count above the – even though he's a grad transfer, he's still part of the 85.
Within the 85, okay. Yeah. The only ones that can go above the 85 are the ones that are returning for eligibility in their senior year. And so a lot of other teams can do that. They probably have more scholarship players on their team past the 85, but the roster spots are still the same. So you may miss out on some walk-ons because you're trying to take care of all the scholarship guys. But I feel, you know, for us, we knew that this was going to be mid-season. We knew that we're going to lose some guys, that we're playing a high number of games, and that they would be fulfilled in the season. But also that a lot of those guys were graduating. And so even though they're granted another year of eligibility, it's just like, well, I have my degree already, and there's a good chance I can go on to the NFL. So it makes sense for a lot of them, like Brady Christensen, to make that move. Uriah was hampered with injury, so to come back and have another shot at it made sense for him. But I think for us, we've kept it more normal than before, and so we're not going to have a huge drop-off in our roster like other teams are going to experience after this year.
Staying on the defensive side of the ball, last year we saw the Cinco position show up, and this year looking at the post-spring depth chart, a couple new positions, Joker and Frodo. What are those, and who came, especially Frodo, who came up with that name?
Probably a Lord of the Rings fan.
Yes.
Yeah, I wish I could just divulge who actually came up with those names and stuff, but they're just different packages that we have in the program. We feel like we have a lot of depth, and so depending on the variety of offenses that we're going to see, from a pro style to a spread to a RPO type system, we're going to have to be really flexible and have a lot of different variety of defense. Whether it's playing more DBs or more linebackers at certain times and against certain schemes. And I'm just grateful that we have Elisa Tuiaki and Ed Lamb and Preston Hadley, you know, Gennaro Guilford. We have Kevin Clue and that staff on the defense working really hard. I just have a lot of confidence that they'll get the right 11 on the field and give us a really good chance to have success as a defense.
How pleased have you been with Elisa? He's been there every step of the way with you during this program from when you got hired. And, you know, sometimes there's outside talking heads that would question his defensive schemes and the cliche drop back eight. But, you know, you point to the stats, and first 5 years, he's top 50 in scoring defense each and every year. What do you feel are maybe like traits or identity of an Elisa Tuiaki defense here at BYU?
I think people probably don't realize the cerebral approach that Elisa Tuiaki has. And it's not just about stats, certain stats, right? And the willingness that he has as a defensive coordinator to work to complement our offense and complement our special teams. And then that's something that's really difficult to do, but not for him, especially when you're a coach that doesn't have an ego and doesn't really mind backlash or criticism. And so I love the fact that his loyalty to the team and to the mission of our program, which is to be aggressive on offense, it requires him to lead a certain way, and the defensive players buy into it. They buy into what he's asking and the physical nature of the game. I mean, the physical part of the game is still there, but his approach to it is unique and different. And you have to keep in mind that he's actually coached on both sides of the ball. He gets it. I mean, he's put a bunch of NFL running backs in the league, and so he knows how to defend those type of teams, and I trust him. I've seen him do some really good things, and all of it at the expense of his own stats. He's willing to sacrifice some of his stats and his prestige and status to help the team win, and that takes a unique individual, and that's why I chose him to be defensive coordinator.
BYU head coach Kalani Sitake is our guest for a little bit more here on KSL News Radio. You know me, Kalani, I always got to ask some personnel questions here. I don't do it as often as I once did. The glow
I expect it from you now. That's okay.
You got to expect it from me. I just wanted to get an update on some of the players like George Udo, Jax McChesney, Flower Potty. Are they ready to go and healthy and good to go for when fall camp starts?
Yeah, I'm knocking on wood because you named all the guys that are ready to go right now, and I'm really excited about them. We're going to be, for the most part, a really healthy team going into fall camp. And we miss those guys. I mean, they're joining – you just named the running backs that are joining two guys that have already been really, really strong for us this season in Lopini Katoa and Tyler Algier. So that group is deep, and we've got some depth in many positions, but – that one just kind of fits the bill on our offensive side. And a lot of the guys returning to their health is going to be a big key for them getting on the field. And I can't wait to see those guys perform. And it's just going to help our team, the depth, and helping even on special teams. Those guys are committed to getting right. And it's just nice to see those guys back.
And then some just maybe update on some personnel that maybe weren't on the roster in spring. Salofa Funa, Elijah Unatoa, is there a path for them to come back, or what's the status on them?
Yeah, we're still working through some attrition and some, you know, with the transfer portal and all that stuff, as live as it is. The goal is to help. I'm not going to speak on anyone individually. They can talk about their own situation, but I want to say the goal is to help young men achieve their goals, and if that means getting on the field earlier, and if that means working hard here and trying to compete, or leaving and finding other opportunities. We're going to try to have great feedback for these young men and put them in a place where they can have happiness. And sometimes that means going and playing somewhere else. Sometimes that means playing here. So, I mean, remember Isaiah Armstrong left and went and played for an FCS team, and we were able to have him come back and perform in Pro Day. And so we care about our guys. Once they're a Cougar, they're always a Cougar. So we're always going to be there to help them and support them. And sometimes that means if they have goals to play and there's great ones in the way, they can either stay here, fight, compete, or they can move on and find an easier path on the field.
Kalani, congrats on the success last season, and hopefully you get some time off between now and the start of fall camp on August 5th. And we always appreciate the time here on KSL News Radio, and best of luck to you and the team this season.
Thank you so much. Go Cougs.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three!
Every Saturday, all year long, BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans,
it's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports,
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday here on June 19th. And at 2:30 p.m., we'll be having a special Juneteenth commentary from players and coaches getting their perspective on this new federal holiday. So you'll want to miss that at 2:30. Just heard from Kalani Sitake. And as always, you can text us, tweet us, give your thoughts on the show. Texter Mitch, 1624, says, "Love the interview with Coach Kalani. I'm so psyched for the encore season. After 2020, BYU seems to be tracking in the right direction on all fronts." And I think that's a great observation, because I know that you and I felt the same way being in person at BYU Media Day earlier this week. A lot of confidence in the direction of the program, confidence in being able to replace the production lost from last year. I can't remember which coach we were talking to, but it's like, I don't love to focus on the past because those guys aren't here. And I love the people we have now. And I loved walking away from Media Day, Mitch, feeling like this BYU program is in a great spot. Is it going to result in a 10-win season? I don't know. It's possible. It's not. Yeah. It's not unrealistic. But I definitely think this is a bowl team minimum, based on just that feeling you got from the players and coaches.
Yeah, and I think it's at least an 8-win team. I don't think that's unreasonable at all. I think this notion that they're just 6-6, 5-7, 7-5. I think they're better than that. I do, and I think that. There's a lot of experience still, even though these guys maybe haven't been QB1, wide receiver 1, they've had a lot of experience in the program, and there's a lot of parallels maybe to that 2007 season where guys had been year after year a part of it, the program, but then they stepped into the limelight and they were ready to go, and there was those systems in place and there was familiarity with the coaching staff. A lot of similarities in that regard. With BYU football in 2021, as new guys look to replace the likes of Zach Wilson, Brady Christensen, but there's capable guys waiting in the wings, ready to step in to that big spotlight. So thanks for all the texts and the commentary about that Kalani Sitake interview. It was a lot of fun. And if you missed it, go to our podcast feed on Apple, Google Play, Spotify, or of course, KSLSports.com and the KSL Sports app presented by University Federal Credit Union.
Now, another big storyline coming out of BYU Media Day was the college football playoff. And last week, we had a lot of fun discussing the playoff and the proposed 12-team expansion to the playoff and what it could mean for BYU football. And, you know, Tom Homo, BYU AD, he went on the record on the state of the program address to share what he feels the college football playoff does to help BYU going forward.
I think it's good news. I've always been a proponent of an expanded playoff. I'm not sure what it would have looked like. They'll figure that out. But for them to come out and have an announcement from the CFP level that it's going to go to 12, and as I followed it in the last couple of days, it looks imminent. It's just a matter of where it is time-wise. It'll help us, whether we're an independent or in a conference or whatever it might be, it'll help us in that there's been too many times when we've been just on the verge of getting in, on the outside looking in, and the numbers haven't been just right, going back years and years.
Interesting commentary there from the athletic director, Tom Homo. I did think it was significant, his words there at the end, if you were paying attention, where he said, whether we're independent, whether we're in a conference, however it's going to be, that's going to benefit us. And it's going to be interesting, Mitch, to see going forward how that's going to be. And the athletic director, Tom Homo, he did have some commentary on, will BYU be in a conference? Will they be independent? Here's what Tom Homo had to say.
One of the things that we do every year is examine where we are, where we've been, and where we're going. So right now, in light of that news, it would be our responsibility to make sure that we see what the environment looks like out there, what the atmosphere is like, see what other people are talking about. There's a lot of stuff that's behind the scenes that doesn't get out. You try to jump into that as much as you can. But if a decision is made, then we will have gone all the way up through our president and all the way up to Salt Lake.
Interesting stuff there, that would go all the way up through Salt Lake. Yeah. But what I took away from that, Mitch, was that BYU is no door they're unwilling to go through. Meaning, hey, if it's independence and that works, I would love it if it did. I know last week we talked about this ad nauseum, so probably go listen to that podcast if you missed it. But I'm worried about the scheduling, the future of scheduling with independence. If it could work out, BYU has an opportunity, certainly more now than they ever did. But I do get the feeling that BYU is going to find their way into a conference.
Yeah, I think that the one hope is that maybe ESPN and that partnership from the TV side of things can still help BYU get quality games, because, you know, you think about a game like Tennessee, or you think about all these games like Nebraska over the years, ESPN was instrumental in getting those games. And maybe ESPN can go to bat for a BYU in a scheduling talk with a program and say, hey, we're going to get this game in a marquee TV spot, ESPN, primetime, 5 p.m. Eastern, whatever it may be. Maybe that can still help in regards to scheduling Power 5 teams in the future, because, you know, other Group of 5 programs, they're not going to have that luxury like BYU has, where ESPN could maybe go to the bat for them. But still, I think that's a little bit naive to just think that ESPN is going to spend time on just wheeling and dealing for BYU in regards to scheduling. Like, if it makes sense for them, sure. And there's money involved, and it's a big, you know, maybe neutral site game. Sure, they'll do that. But I do think more than ever, since in the 10 years that BYU's been an independent, this is the first real time where it feels like the Group of Five could be a viable path for BYU. And I don't think it would be met with, oh, BYU's conceding on football, they're giving up, they're throwing in the towel. The goal is still Power Five. And I were talking before the show, to me, the Big 12 Conference is not the league that I look at and think BYU would go to. I've given up on the Big 12. I'm over that. Like, that's never going to happen. I would love to see it happen, but I have no faith it will ever will. To me, the league that could potentially be the spot for BYU is the Pac-12, because they got a new commissioner. And maybe there's some sort of relationships that BYU can form there with that new commissioner, and maybe that commissioner can overlook the fact that BYU is a faith-based institution, because really, that's the only hang-up for BYU. You put BYU in the Pac-12, they're going to bring 20,000-30,000 fans to every conference game in California every single year. Like, BYU every other year in UCLA or USC, they're going to bring 20,000 fans guaranteed. They would be huge for the gate. They'd be huge for interest for the Pac-12 conference. It would be massive. That's the only league I look at in the Power 5 that BYU could possibly join. If not that, and that's still probably a long shot, it would be the AAC to me, because the Mountain West is a non-starter. They're not partnered with ESPN.
Yep.
And quite frankly, they just don't have the quality of athletic departments like the AAC has. AAC partnered with ESPN. They got better football. And you could probably stay in the West Coast Conference as a basketball-only member, because, let's face it, the WCC only cares about hoops, so that works out finally still.
My number one option would be starting some kind of new conference. Now, they don't have to be the ones leading the charge, but maybe grabbing the best of the rest, I think, is what interests me. I haven't closed the door on the Big 12. I like the fit in the Big 12. The reason I haven't closed the door, Mitch, is I still think there's going to be a day where the other conferences say, this is ridiculous. We have 14 teams. We have way harder teams. Like, when you think about the Big 12, are we factoring in more than three in terms of being legitimate in terms of getting a conference championship? No. It's Texas, it's Oklahoma, and it's maybe occasionally an Oklahoma State or a TCU or someone like that. And I think there will be a day, and I don't know when it's going to be, but I think there'll be a day where they say, you need to get with the times and expand. I think there will be a day where all these conferences have to be on a level playing field.
Okay, so like from Big 12's 10 teams right now, you're saying jump it up to 12 and 14 like the other leagues.
Absolutely. Where it's gotcha. Like, hey, I don't know how they would penalize them, but maybe there becomes a time where they're slipping out of the buys, where repeatedly they're not getting the respect from the committee for not having 12 teams, and they're saying, hey, what do we have to do to get a bye? Well, you got to be on the same playing field as these other teams, so you need to add more teams.
That's a good point, that I haven't really thought of because, if we do see this shift in the playoff to 12 teams, maybe the next phase is uniformity with the leagues where it's all 12, 14-team leagues, maybe all nine conference league games, which would be bad for BYU when it comes to scheduling the SEC or the ACC because fewer non-conference opportunities would not bode well for BYU. That's an interesting thought, and hopefully that could happen because, it's ridiculous that the Big 12 only has 10. It's like I get it. They're doing it from a financial perspective where their payouts are somewhat comparable to the SEC right now, despite not having as lucrative of a TV deal. But the SEC is going to make a ton of money coming up in their next ESPN deal. The Big 10 is going to make a ton of money with Fox coming up. Big 12 is going to fall behind, say, with the Pac-12. Those are the two leagues potentially in the power conference that BYU could land, but BYU's got to definitely be more open than ever for a conference.
And I think the most important thing to discuss, Mitch, and we'll do this in the coming weeks, is the opportunity BYU has this year and next year, I think will play a large role in what happens in the future. Because if they have another 10-win year and they're beating some good teams, and then teams view BYU down the road as an asset to their schedule and boosting their resume, maybe that keeps independence open. Maybe that, forces the AAC to invite them or even the Big 12. Now, if they slip back down to 7-5, then I think it's a different conversation. But there's a unique window here coming off an 11-1 window where you can really add some cachet to the program.
BYU and conference realignment. Name a more iconic duo. I'll wait. We got to take a break, though. On the other side, we'll talk about the BYU quarterback battle. Aaron Roderick had some interesting commentary. We'll get to that next. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday here, June 19th, 2021. Media Day was a couple days ago. Really fun to be in person, talking with coaches, with players, getting their insight on the upcoming season, hearing about the Built for Life Foundation, which we've discussed. And one thing I thought was really interesting was this is the first time, Mitch, that we've had the opportunity to talk to these quarterbacks. It's the first conversation I've ever had with Jacob Conover. I can't remember having conversations with Jaren Hall. We've talked with Baylor Romney, Aaron Roderick a few times, but of course there was no definitive quarterback situation. We're not going to get one. You heard from Kalani earlier. He said, why fabricate a timeline when we just need someone by the BYU versus Arizona game?
Yeah.
So to me, it's not even worth asking that question anymore because it's just a waste of time. What I did find interesting was during the state of the program, Aaron Roderick was asked about each individual quarterback. And he had one sentence about Jaren Hall, which I think has tipped the quarterback battle in favor of Jaren. And that comment from Aaron Roderick was, if Jaren is healthy, he's going to be hard to beat out. And I just think that kind of echoes a sentiment you and I have felt strongly about for a while now here on the program, which is, if Jaren Hall is healthy, because of his dual threat ability, because of that high ceiling with his athleticism, I think he's the starting quarterback.
Yeah, I do too. And I think I came out of media day feeling like he is the leader in that three-man race. Now, I feel like Jacob Conover, the fact that he's in the initial post-spring depth chart listed as Jaren Hall or Baylor Romney or Jacob Conover. Speaks to the fact that Conover is a talented freshman and they're willing to give him every opportunity to try to potentially win this job. But Jaren Hall, the fact that he's going into his fourth fall in the program, he's been around the block. Like, that is a unique thing in a quarterback battle to have two guys that are going into their fourth football seasons in a program. Usually you're talking about whenever replacing a star quarterback, it's like, okay, you got a true freshman, you got guys that are just basically brand new. Jaren Hall and Baylor Romney have been around the block. They understand Aaron Roderick. There's chemistry there. They understand what they expect from one another. And I just feel like Jaren Hall, too, what he showed in his last appearance at BYU in a game against Utah State in 2019, he was fantastic. And you and I have both watched that game a couple different times and just kind of reexamined that, because that was, again, the last time we saw him in a game. He was fantastic. He was brilliant. What the things we saw from Zach Wilson in 2020, that was what Jaren Hall was doing against a Utah State team that at that time was a favorite in that game, and BYU's scoring offense was 103rd in the country going into that contest. And he led BYU to an explosive first half that then Baylor Romney carried over into the second half. But yeah, Jaren Hall's big time talent. And I think that, you know, he's always been ahead of Baylor Romney in the depth chart in years prior. Why would that not carry over this year? What's changed dramatically over the last, you know, 18, 20 months to suggest that Jaren Hall shouldn't get a first crack at that first string job? But I think he's going to be that first string quarterback against Arizona. I think that's the right move for BYU, as long as he is healthy in fall camp.
And you got to read the tea leaves in these situations too.
Sure.
Because we're not going to get a direct answer from these guys. That comment is one tea leaf that I think is interesting. Another one, we just have to remember this. Jaren Hall was an outstanding baseball player. Thought, you know, if he focused on baseball, he could go pro. He's given that up for now. Now, that doesn't mean he couldn't reverse course and go back to it. But you don't give that up if you don't feel like I'm going to be the man. If he had been told, hey, you need to do just unbelievable things to win the job, I'm just being honest with you. Because I believe that these coaches are honest with these players. We hear the players tell us. They are honest and open about what's going to happen and where we stand. And so we have every reason to believe that they're being forthright and honest about where people stand. The fact that he is doubling down on football and putting in more time to football makes me believe that he is the front runner for the job.
And what's great, too, is he's following in the same path as Zach Wilson. You know, Jaren Hall talked to us that he's working with John Beck at 3D QB. He's going down to California. He's doing a lot of the things that endeared BYU fans to Zach Wilson. He's making the 10-hour treks to California. He's going down there to work with John Beck. Like, you, that investment, there's a feeling that
you don't do that if you're not the favorite to be the quarterback.
Right, because at his juncture of his career, it's like, he's kind of at a crossroads where this is a make or break year, I feel like, for Jaren Hall in a way. Like, if he does get the starting job and say he gets injured, it might be hard to recapture the starting job again, because I think the floodgates open for Baylor or for Conover. It might be hard to retain that job once again. This is Jaren Hall's moment. This is his offseason. He senses it. He knows it. He was very confident in Media Day about his abilities as a player. And he also talked as a player that, just in our conversations with him, I think throughout the entire media day with other organizations, just very, you know, confident and also very loose with the way that, you know, he spoke like a guy that just sounded like he was a starter. It wasn't like scripted, kind of coached up on what to say. He was very candid, I thought, in a lot of his answers. And I really enjoyed Jaren Hall talking to him. And I think that he is someone that would be a great story for BYU, overcoming injuries. First Black American starting quarterback in BYU football history. Guy's a great dude. He's a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. There's just a lot to like about Jaren Hall's story. And on top of it all, he's a great football player, too. Yeah. And I'm excited to see what Aaron Roderick can do potentially for a full season with Jaren Hall. I want to see that happen. And I think that Jaren Hall should be that number one guy.
And I'm glad you bring up the football. You know, we referenced that first half against Utah State. We've both rewatched that several times. I think it's important to note he went up against a quarterback that may be starting in the NFL this year.
Great point.
In Jordan Love. And he was remarkably better than Jordan Love in that football game. And that wasn't a situation either, Mitch, where he just sat back, had all day and made throws. He was throwing dimes on the run. He was making people miss in the open field. There were critical third downs where there was pressure. He recognized the pressure, stepped up on the run, throws it. I remember one throw in particular. It was like a 3rd and 7 near about the Utah State 40-yard line. He steps up on the run, throws it to Micah Simon, coming across the field.
Yeah.
And right on target, Simon gets the first down. They don't end up scoring. That might have been the Emmanuel Supa fumble. Anyways, we're getting into the weeds here. But the point being, he showed all the throws in that football. He can make all the throws.
And that was with the patchwork offensive line, too, where Blake Freeland was in his second start, I believe. A lot of injuries on that offensive line, and he still created the time necessary. I think the O-line's going to be a lot better this year. It's going to be tough to surpass what last year's offensive line did, but you still bring back Blake Freeland. Harris LeChance, I think, is going to be a stud at right tackle. James Empey's an All-American candidate at center. There's pieces in place for that offensive line to protect and give Jaren Hall or whoever the quarterback is, the time necessary to succeed. But yes,
I'd be stunned if it's not Jaren Hall. I'd be stunned.
I'm getting to that point where it feels like just hearing the competition, it's for us in the media, but I feel like Jaren Hall, it feels like it's his job to lose.
Yes.
Unless he is a complete disaster in fall camp, or he gets hurt, or he's got a 20% completion rate. Like, if he avoids all that, and I think he will, especially work with John Beck, This should be Jaren Hall's offense in week 1 against Arizona.
We'll take a break here. News, traffic, and weather up next. And then one of our favorite moments of the program, it's the top 5. We'll do that next here. Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSOSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for 3! Covers by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Yeah, welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. KSL News Time, 1:36 p.m. on this Saturday afternoon, June 19th, a new federal holiday. Coming up a little bit later in the program, in hour number 3, we'll be joined by BYU tight end Isaac Rex and All-American candidate center James Empey. They're going to be joining the program to discuss name, image, likeness and the 2021 football season. And then also, coming up around 2:30, we'll have a special June 19th special programming, hearing from Kalani Sitake, Tyler Algier, Jaren Hall, about what Juneteenth means to them. So stay tuned for that. We got a lot ahead here on Cougar Sports Saturday. But first, we got to get to the top 5.
The Cougar Sports Saturday top 5. Mitch and Matt clash in a weekly battle of BYU sports knowledge. The Cougar Sports Saturday top 5.
Yes, top 5, and it's always brought to you by Economic Partners, Utah's premier business evaluation and strategic consulting firm. If you need a business evaluation, contact Econ Partners. .com today. We'll bring on the maestro of the top 5, our producer, Dallin Graff. Dallin, what do you got on deck this week?
Well, we're going to stick in the conversation on quarterbacks.
Okay.
Because that's what we love talking about, right? I mean, that's where the fun is had, you know, speculating about what next season may look like. And, this starter who comes in is going to have to fill some big shoes. Part of what I looked at this week as far as statistics go is, the ability for this next quarterback to reach some of those statistical milestones that we saw perhaps last season and in the past. So today, we are looking at the last 5 BYU quarterbacks who had over 3,500 yard passing seasons.
Wow. Okay.
So BYU quarterbacks who threw for 3,500 yards. The last 5 quarterbacks to do that. So not the last 5 seasons.
Okay.
QBs specifically. So we're looking for 5 different names here. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we're going to start with Mitch this week. Coming off a week, by the way, where, neither of you got the win. And I don't always love getting the wins here.
Yeah,
but
you do. I don't love you. Yeah, you do.
I won't complain too much. All right. Let's see what we can do this week, though. Mitch, what is your first guess?
Let's go with Max Hall.
Yes, Max Hall, great pick. He had multiple seasons, 3 seasons, in fact, where he had over 500 yards in 2007, 2008, and 2009. His best of those, that 2008 season with almost 4,000 passing yards, 3,957 yards for Max Hall.
Yeah, Max Hall was a stud. He's that guy that maybe you could make a case for the Mount Rushmore. Maybe he gets bumped because of some other guys recently, but I think that, you know, Hall was all-time winner, too. Winning as quarterback in BYU football history, that amounts for something. So Max Hall, special talent in BYU history.
No doubt. All right, Matt, what's your first guess?
My first guess is John Beck.
All right, yes, just preceding Max Hall here. John Beck had two seasons where he threw for over 3,500 yards in 2005 and 2006. In fact, you put those five seasons together between these two quarterbacks we've already discussed, and from 2005 to 2009, every single year BYU had a 3,500-yard passer there. So a great stretch of quarterback play there. And, you know, perhaps maybe we're coming into a stretch of quarterback play similar to that.
Oh, I hope so. I think what you have to remember about John Beck is how much adversity he overcame. Like, it's easy to remember 2005 and 2006 with Bronco, where 2005, they kind of rebuilt the program, right? And then in 2006, they had that breakout year. That dude overcame so much in his first two seasons, you know, being in, being out, what's happening. I mean, that could derail people's careers, and it often does. And that wasn't the case for John Beck. So that's something I remember about him, is just the adversity that he overcame to reach the levels that he did.
And it also is another testament to having a passion. He has a passion for the game of football, and that's why he's one of the top quarterback coaches in the sport right now. And that's why he's coaching up guys like Jaren Hall. He's coaching up Zach Wilson, Justin Fields. Like, John Beck is an elite quarterback mind and just a passionate guy for the game of football. So no surprise he's having the success he's having.
All right, we got two big names off the board. We go back to Mitch. What's your next guess?
How about let's go with Steve Sarkisian? Oh, okay.
Whoa.
No Steve Sarkisian.
I'm going to go with a guy, and I bring this up because of my sick obsession with watching YouTube losses and wins. It's not always losses, but during the offseason, I get heavy into rewatching games. I think he might have had one season like this. Kevin Federick?
There we go. Kevin Federick, 1999. Kevin Federick threw for 3,554 yards. That was the only season he threw for over 3,500 yards. Only season he had, you know, over 350 pass attempts, you know, was able to truly get the ball out there. But a solid season for him in 1999. And the guy, maybe you don't necessarily think about when you're thinking about BYU quarterbacks. There's a lot.
Yeah, Kevin Federick would probably be like the best quarterback at most college programs, but he's kind of an afterthought at BYU. But really, right. He was good. Like, he was a good quarterback at BYU. I always remember he was a pretty hot shot recruit coming out of Los Alamitos, California, and his dad would always be at like the tunnel at BYU games. He had the old Sony Walkman yellow headset with the green button. So he was like, he was listening probably to KSL radio back in the day during listening to his son. But yeah, Federick, he had some good run there. 97, beat out Paul Shoemaker in the 98, 99. Those were some good BYU teams, but kind of forgotten. But part of the Kalani Sitake tenure at BYU when Kalani was playing.
And I think some of it, too, just they never reached the heights that they wanted to in the Federick era. But it doesn't help when you're a lefty quarterback and you don't reach the heights of Steve Young. And that might not be fair to say, but Steve Young will forever be like probably the greatest left-handed quarterback ever, right? And so you just – when you're kind of – I know it's not fair, but I remember feeling this way. It was like, well, you're not Steve Young.
Well, and I think recruiting took a little slip, too. At the end there, at the Lavelle era, recruiting was kind of becoming a little bit more of a country club vibe. Like, no disrespect to Lavelle. He was a legend. But, like, just after 27-something years, 29 years, like, you're going to have a ease up a touch. And recruiting kind of slipped. And that's why I think those teams with Federick at the end there of Lavelle's tenure – didn't really have the success that maybe you would have thought they would have based on some of the personnel and the talent that they had that were upperclassmen.
All right, we go back to Mitch for the next guess here. Matt, up 2-1 right now.
Let's go with 2001 Brandon Doman.
Yes, Brandon Doman, 3,542 yards for Brandon Doman in 2001. That was obviously a fantastic season for BYU. Highlighted, you know, Luke Staley winning the Doak Walker. But Brandon Doman as a quarterback, over 400 pass attempts, and he had a great season.
Yeah. He was really good. The Dominator kind of gets forgotten. He was a fifth-round NFL draft pick, too. Went to the 49ers, parlayed that one season, and goes from triple-option quarterback at Skyline, was a wide receiver at BYU, buried on the depth chart at quarterback. But then Lavelle finally called him up in that final season with Lavelle, and those final two games of the season kind of gave BYU some life, and it carried over with Gary Crow and Luke Staley in 2001, and that was one of the more explosive offenses I've ever seen. BYU football team. I want to say they're still an all-time leading scoring offense. I think 650-something points, I think, in BYU history in the season. That was a big-time offense with Doman.
Yeah, and he still had the run element. That's what's incredible. It wasn't like he just sat back there and slung it around. So to be able to put up those kind of passing yards while still being a dual-threat guy is really a testament to how great that offense was.
Yeah. He was clutch, too. Like, there was games where he had to come up with something late, and he'd win it, like New Mexico, Utah. Brandon Doman was really good.
All right. We're tied at two. One name left on the list, and we go to Matt. Can you finish it off here?
I'd like to be able to finish it off here. There's no doubt about it. I did drink a Baja Blast, the new one on the way up here, so maybe the power of Mountain Dew. I'm going back and forth between two guys, and this is a position I hate to be in. I'd rather just feel like it's this guy. I've won a top five with this guy before, so I feel like I have to do it. John Walsh. Oh!
No, John Walsh.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Let's
see. The door is open for Mitch.
Oh, no.
Okay. Ty Detmer?
What? Okay.
A reminder, the last five quarterbacks to throw for over 3,500 yards in a season for BYU. We have one name left. And we're back to Matt. Can we close it out?
Oh, my goodness.
So just to recap, the names so far, Max Hall, John Beck, Brandon Doman, Kevin Federick.
Come on, Matt, miss
this. One name left.
I know it.
Oh, my goodness. Mitch thinks he has it. Oh, boy. The last five. I'm going to try. I don't feel good about this. I think he just narrowly missed it. Zach Wilson? Oh, thank you.
What?
And Matt comes in with the win.
He had 3,300 yards, didn't he, this past year?
3,600 yards.
Thank you.
For Zach Wilson. 3,600
yards. I'm a Jets fan forever, baby. Let's go.
How do I miss Zach Wilson?
You know, I thought that was going to be the first guess. I'm not going to lie.
I could have sworn he had like 3,300 yards. Maybe I'm getting like he had 33 touchdowns, three picks, right?
Yes. Yeah,
okay, that's where I'm at.
I thought it was at 3,300, too, which is why it didn't come to mind.
Yeah.
Just under 3,700.
Oh, man.
And put this into perspective here as we look towards this next season. In 13 games played, you know, 12 plus a bowl game potentially, the quarterback would have to average 269 yards per game to reach that 3,500 mark. And I don't think that's unrealistic at all for any of the three names that could potentially be the starting quarterback.
It can be done, and it should be done. Like, if you're going to be a good offense and you're going to win a lot of football games, and this is something I was griping about for years before last year, can BYU get back to a passing offense? Like, yeah. I want 300 yards a game. I want 3,000-yard passers. Those, to me, are marks of good offenses, and that's what we saw last year.
You know, I was if Matt wasn't going to say Zach Wilson, my next guess was going to be Tanner Mangum in 2015. What did he end up with?
He was close. That 3,300, just under 3,400 yards for Tanner Mangum. So just sort of missed out there. But Matt, you got the win on the top five.
Yes.
Well done.
Yes. I dedicate this to Brett Pine, who was great at Media Day. He says he listened to this every week. I did it, Brett. I'm back on top. Let's go.
Jeez. I missed Zach Wilson. How did I miss Zach Wilson? I am like kicking myself. Oh man.
I'm cracking another Dew and I'm drinking a Baja every ride up here. Let's go.
That new Dew with the pineapple, that thing's on point. Dallin, have you tried?
Listening, stop drinking it.
I need to go to my local Macy's. I need to find them.
It might be too hard. I literally had to go to Macy's 7 days in a row to get my hands on any of the Baja Blast flavors. I finally did it.
It's dedication.
Wow. And that dedication has now been rewarded with a victory, courtesy of one Zachary Wilson.
I love
once
it.
Again.
The top five is always brought to you by Economic Partners, Utah's premier business valuation. Zach, if you want to send me a jersey, I'll wear it each and every show. If you need a business valuation, contact econpartners.com. We'll take a break. Back with more after this.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Sports Saturday,
a presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Cougars by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans for Cougar fans. It's Cougar Sports Saturday. Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio, your legacy home of the BYU Cougars. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte here. And as always, every single Saturday, we're talking BYU football. Counting down the days till BYU opens up fall camp on August 5th. And we're joined now by two men here at the same time. Looking forward to this. It'll be a lot of fun. BYU center James Empey and BYU tight end Isaac Rex, two, I think, freshman All-Americans. Both of you guys can lay claim that you've been All-Americans at some point in your BYU career. Well, that's pretty impressive, James.
Yeah, how about that, huh? Yeah, how about James, Isaac last year?
James likes that a lot, but I'm not focused on my freshman season. But James always likes to tell me about the glory days. And this season, back in 2012, right?
2009. Oh, yeah. It was a while ago. I don't expect you to remember. You're probably watching on TV from the couch.
He always likes it. No, I was in a cradle.
So, Isaac, let me start off with you. What from last season, the offense, the success that transpired, what can be pulled from that year that carries over into this season, despite some of maybe the new faces, say, at quarterback?
Well, yeah, I feel like we just have a lot of returning guys also. We lost a good amount of guys, but we have a lot of returning guys in its own right. So we've all had a great spring together. We all got better as a team, and honestly, we're excited to carry on what we did last year. I feel like we played really well last year, but I feel like we can even rise up to our competition this year and keep this thing going. So it was a tough situation losing some guys last year, but we have so much talent on this team, and I feel like we'll be definitely prepared for this season.
James, the offensive line was a critical piece to the offensive success last year, and some guys have moved on to the NFL. Some guys have returned as well. What would you say to Cougar fans about this current offensive line group and the heights that you guys can get to?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's no secret. It's hard to replace guys like, you know, Tree and Shannon and Brady for sure. I mean, they're, you know, on NFL rosters right now trying to make teams for a reason because they were really good and solid for us last year in terms of who we have, you know, in the pipeline and the guys that are going to fill those spots. I feel confident in the guys that'll step in and play because most of them have already had some game time and have shown that they can, you know, handle it. And so just excited to see what we can put together and excited to see how, you know, our guys can compete this fall and step up to the plate.
Are you viewing this year, James, as your senior year? I know Isaac earlier was saying you've been here since, what, 2005 or something? No, I'm just kidding. But are you looking at this year as your senior year?
Yeah, I mean, well, when you throw in a COVID year, yeah, you know, it makes everything kind of confusing, I guess, for everybody. So to me, it feels like my senior year. I guess I'll only know that when, you know, this year's over. But I'm for sure doing my best to, you know, be the best I can be and make the most of this season for sure.
And Isaac, you come into this year where you could still technically be a freshman, and yet you're coming off a year where you tied Kyle Pitts for touchdown grabs with 12 a season ago. Where do you feel like you've grown in your game since the day you arrived at BYU back in, what, 2019?
Yeah, I've definitely grown a ton since I came off a mission in 2019. I went from just going on scout team, and honestly, I feel like scout team was probably one of the best things for me. I was able to play against some great competition every single day, like Zane, like Isaiah Kafusi, like Keenan Peely, and all those good D linemen that from back in the day, and they made me so much better. And then when I got, when I was kind of forced in a weird spot to play because Matt was obviously was the guy, and he was going to kill it last season. I feel so bad that he had to go down with an injury, but I just didn't want to be like the weak point on the team. You know, I had to come and try to just play the best of my abilities. So this year is going to be different because I know I'm going to, you know, be playing, and I'm going to be out there. So it's going to be good that I have another year of experience, or I've had a year of experience. So I've just felt like I've improved so much over since I first gotten here, but I can improve even more.
Isaac, you mentioned those circumstances that led to you having such an outstanding season last year, maybe kind of flew under the radar a little bit. Towards the end of the year, you had, I think, become a household name, but now you're going into a year where when you look at that BYU offense, you're one of the first names that comes up in terms of we got to take things away. We got to take Isaac Rex away. During an off season in the spring football and a summer and getting for full camp, how do you prepare for that added intensity is not the right word, but added spotlight when defenses look at this BYU offense?
Yeah, the great thing about our offense is we have so many weapons on our – we have running backs, we have receivers, we have tight ends, we have quarterbacks. It's going to be hard to just focus on one skill position. It's going to be hard to just lock in on one guy. We are a full-on offense. We're a full-on team, and so – I'm so grateful that my teammates are so talented that, because they're gonna have to try to stop Gunner, they're gonna try to stop Tyler, the Nakuas, Neil, you know, Lopini. It's like, how are you gonna stop all those guys too? It's gonna be a tough thing for our those defenses against us. So I'm so grateful for them, and I feel bad for some defenses because it's going to be tough to try to game plan against so many different packages we can run and just how good we can be. So, but we still have to just can't get complacent. We can't rely on last year. Last year is in the past. We're not focused on that anymore. We're focused on this schedule coming up and working to be the best to have the best year possible.
James, Coach Daryl Funk took a break out of his afternoon walks around the stadium to catch up with us earlier in spring and told us that you gave him like a long list of things that you want to improve. And he was kind of taken aback, he told us, because he thought, man, this guy's the All-American on my offensive line, and he shouldn't be looking to improve. But it sounds like, you know, you still feel like there's areas in your game that you want to get better. What would those be?
You know, without drawing out the list for you, like I did for Coach Funk, I'll save you the time. But I mean, if you're not looking at your game, and this probably goes out to some of the younger athletes as well in high school and stuff, if you're not looking at every aspect of your game and trying to get better, you're doing yourself a disservice. You know what I mean? You're never perfect. There's always something else that you can do and get better at, and there's always more work that you can put into, you know, be the player you want to be. And so, you know, I look at, you know, my season last year and I see, you know, my shortcomings. It's kind of how I was raised too, to be able to critique myself and you know, really want to have, you know, a good output in the game, really want to reach my potential. And so with that and with the goals and, you know, dreams that I have and a lot of us have, as, you know, a lot of the guys on the team have, I think we all look at our game and look for ways that we can improve and get better, and so that we can, you know, have the best season we can have this fall.
Last couple moments here with James Empey and Isaac Rex. You guys are both wearing Built for Life polos. You know, Kalani and Tom Holmoe created a program where when the time comes, the NCAA, you know, will allow name, image, likeness. You guys could, you know, profit off that. Does that even, you know, register a thought for you guys? Like, because, I mean, you guys know BYU, and you guys have grown up in it. You're part of BYU families where your dad's played here and been part of this program. You know that the fan base is passionate and there's opportunities there for your personal brands to grow. Has name, image, likeness ever crossed your mind now that this is a thing with Built for Life when it does come into effect? We'll start with you, Isaac.
It's a great opportunity, and it's something that breaks apart from other schools. I don't think many other schools has a program set up for student athletes to possibly make extra money or start a nonprofit in whatever field they want. And so Kalani and Tom, they did a great job, really a great job of setting this up for the whole team and for all the student athletes and focusing on that. But honestly, like, the best way to get money is to ball out, I think. So, like,
hey, that $22 million from Zach Wilson, that's pretty nice.
Like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure even if this thing was out, I'm sure Zach would still want to go to the league, you know. I don't know if he'd make 32 from name, image, and likeness, but like, for me personally, I'm more focused on my game instead of like, sure, what I'm posting on social media, even though I like posting on Instagram and having fun with that. Like, it's like, it's another great opportunity for what sets apart BYU. But for me personally, like, I just want to focus on playing the game, working hard, doing what's right, so I can make even more money down the road, you know. It's, my dad always says, like, don't count your pennies, like, or something. I don't know. He said some phrase like that, but
it resonated, didn't it?
It resonated.
Slapped a little different.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot the phrase, but I mean, I'm just like more focused on playing my game than social media, you know, or making money. Right.
What
now,
about for you, James?
Yeah, I'd probably agree with Isaac. I think there's a time and a place for everything, and you know, the rules aren't even out yet, so who even knows what you can do or can't do? But what I do really appreciate is the, you know, athletic department, and especially Kalani, and you know, everybody involved with the Built for Life, is that they're, you know, trying their best to take care of us, and they've done that since, you know, since when I was back here, you know, however many years ago, when I
99
started, back when Isaac was in diapers,
back in the Stone Age.
But they've always taken care of us. That's always been a huge focus, and you know, with all this coming out, I appreciate that they've, you know, been on top of it and are trying to do their best to continue to take care of us. So, if you know, if that says anything about our staff, you know, it's that they love us and care for us and want us to be a lot more successful, not just on the football field. So.
Isaac Rex, James Impey. Last thing, James, when we talked with Coach Funk, he was asking for some places to eat. Now, we've seen some pictures of the offensive line group going out. Where does he have a favorite place yet that he's taking you guys to eat?
Well, the other day he took us to Bam Bam's, and, you know, Bam Bam's is always good. If you haven't tried out Bam Bam's, that's great. Cam is the man.
Yep.
But there's a whole bunch of places to eat in Provo that are pretty good. My wife and I, we just like to go try new places, so. You know.
What have you tried recently?
Have you ever had Fat Daddy's Pizza?
Yes.
On Center Street?
Yeah.
Dang good.
It's good.
That's great. You know, now that I'm on the spot, I'm going to be, it's like, stop remembering places. Have you ever been to Joe's Cafe?
Joe's, their pancakes. Like the, I don't know if you ever had the mini ones. Man, dang good.
Joe's Cafe is
Joe's
crazy.
Joe's Cafe is legit.
There's a bunch of places. Take your pick.
Nice. Well, good stuff. We got to make some of those picks here soon. Yeah. We appreciate you guys picking us in this spot to do an interview and spend some time, and good luck this season, guys, and wish you nothing but the best.
Thanks.
Yep, appreciate it. Thank you.
James Empey and Isaac Rex here on KSL News Radio.
Here's special coverage on Cougar Sports Saturday, the Juneteenth holiday. Here's Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte on KSL News Radio.
Welcome back to Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. As always, your legacy home of the BYU Cougars. It's Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper here with you on this Juneteenth holiday. On June 19th, 1865, enslaved African Americans in Galveston, Texas, were first told they were freed under the Emancipation Proclamation. And earlier this week, the President of the United States signed the Juneteenth National Independence Day Act into law, making today, Juneteenth, a federal holiday here in the United States. And Mitch, Juneteenth commemorates the end of slavery in the United States and has been celebrated in various parts of the country all the way back to 1866.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. I think it's a neat thing that this is now a federal holiday. And Matt, when obviously here on this program we talk a lot about BYU football, and when it comes to BYU football and race, I think most people who probably don't follow BYU football extensively would just think everyone who plays for the team or is part of the university is just a white guy who's a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But it's changed quite a bit over the years. And I think that's a great thing, because BYU has come a long way in this regard when it comes to diversity and race in the program, and also the entire athletic department. Because you got to go back to 1970. We got a piece up on KSLSports.com
when BYU had their first Black American player letter with the varsity program, and that was Ron Knight. BYU had gone a long 20-plus years without any Black athletes in their athletic department prior to Knight's arrival at BYU. BYU had two Black track and field athletes in the 1950s before Knight signed to play football for BYU, but long time. That was a long gap, and Knight had a successful junior college career at Northeastern Oklahoma A&M College, and he joined BYU as a defensive back and played 2 years for the Cougars and had 91 tackles and two interceptions during his career. So he broke the color barrier for BYU football, and it's opened doors for so many players after him. But Knight's arrival signaled a stronger effort for BYU to recruit more Black athletes, and there was always a desire to have Black athletes at BYU, but not many resources really were put into recruiting the Black athlete, because usually the Cougars' efforts on the recruiting trail were always met with no's. So BYU kind of played it safe and stayed with guys that were primarily white, LDS, and that just wanted to be at BYU. That changed with former BYU head football coach Tommy Hudspeth. And during the 1969 season, BYU faced a lot of protests. One that garnered a lot of national headlines was a game against nationally ranked Wyoming. Wyoming had 14 athletes, commonly known now as the Black 14. The Black 14 wanted to participate in a protest on the Laramie campus leading up to their game against BYU. The protest centered around Black men not being allowed to have the priesthood within the church. And Wyoming's head coach Lloyd Eaton dismissed the 14 players after arriving in his office wearing Black armbands on their clothing. And the dismissal sparked national controversy, and BYU was at the center of it. And it carried on into other sporting events within the Western Athletic Conference. And after that academic year concluded, BYU publicly vowed to recruit more Black athletes to its athletic teams. And ever since, Black athletes have made an impact in football and men's basketball and everywhere else in between. The first Black American basketball players were Keith Rice and Danny Frazier in 1977. Frazier's son, Jamison, played for the BYU football program from 2008 to 2011. And since 1977, BYU basketball has had 44 Black athletes in the program, four of which will be on the roster this year, and three of those four originally hail from countries in Africa. And in the football program, minority athletes such as Calvin Noy, Jamal Willis, Leon White, Jamal Williams, Derwin Gray, Cody Hoffman. I could go on and on, Matt. There's been so many great minority athletes that have come through this program. And you fast forward to today, and BYU football represents many individuals from different walks of life. The Cougars are led by the first ever Tongan head coach in Kalani Sitake. And in this upcoming season, BYU could have a backfield with a Black American as their starting QB and a Black, white, Filipino starting running back in the same backfield. That's pretty cool. I think that's fantastic. Yeah. And earlier this week, you and I, Matt, we caught up with BYU football players and coaches to discuss what Juneteenth means to them and life as student athletes at BYU. We'll start things off with BYU quarterback Jaron Hall, who's vying to be that starting QB this fall, and we asked him what Juneteenth means to him.
It's part of my history. It's part of my culture, and I'm proud of my past and learning about my ancestors of the past. It means that the world has become a better place, right? All that there's a lot of negativity out there from the past and things going on currently, but I think that's something to look as a pillar of light, something to look forward to. There's good in people. People aren't perfect. They make mistakes, but there's always something good that's going to come later. It just takes time. And for me, I just look at that as a day of remembering that, we're all children of God, and there's a lot of good to be done still, but there's still a lot of good out there, So live your life the best you can and love everybody around you.
You have unique experience with your dad having been here, mm-hmm. and I'm sure he's spoke to, how things have grown, but what do you feel the race relations at BYU have improved over the years, you feel?
Yeah, it's improved. It's as simple as that. It's gotten better. I don't think by taking a population in numbers means anything at all. It's the type of people you bring is what matters. And so there's good people in every race and every culture. And so it's all about those kids wanting to be here, and that's really what it comes down to. Nothing to do with the university or, what's going on there, but it's the type of kids you want to bring. And so you just go out and find them, and that's what BYU does, and that's why I love this university.
That was BYU quarterback Jaron Hall talking about what Juneteenth means to him and how lucky are we, Mitch, as BYU fans to have athletes like Jaron Hall in the program now and even athletes in the past like Jamal Williams, like Yoli Childs, who can lend their experience and help us move forward as we try to make the world a better place.
Yeah, I think it was great commentary there from Jaron. And you know, first off, he's a guy that he's just a well-spoken individual, and he really does sound like a starting quarterback for BYU. I think, you know, we came away from media day feeling like he's probably going to be that guy. And we'll obviously – we've talked a ton about Jaron and the quarterback room today. We'll talk more as we count down to the season. But, you know, it's cool to think just in 50-something years – really is where the color barrier broke in for BYU football. And a lot of programs in 1970, you think about Clemson, Texas, Alabama. So it wasn't just like BYU was the last of their kind. I mean, BYU, that was in that area. But still, that's only 50-something years ago where that happened. A lot of people that are listening to the show today were alive, likely, for that experience when Ron Knight was playing for BYU football. And to think of all the doors it's opened since – it's just great to see, and it's not simply, like Jaron Hall said, about numbers. It's about the quality of people. And I think BYU is a place that, regardless whether you're white, whatever you may be, black, Hispanic, whatever, you know, if you have a good attitude, embrace BYU. I think it's an area, a platform, where you can have a lot of success. I remember when Kalani Sitake, after the Poinsettia Bowl, said, you know, guys like Jamal Williams who have faced trials, we need more guys like Jamal Williams because we need a diversified, you know, portfolio of just, you know, players and different walks of life to come into this locker room. And to hear Jaron Hall talk about that, I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, and I loved how he brought up the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints as well, Mitch, because the whole mission of the church is to follow the example set by Jesus Christ. And if we do that, I think we're going to make the world a better place. We'll take a break here on Cougar Sports Saturday. We'll hear from Kalani Sitake, Tyler Algier, as we continue talking about Juneteenth here on the program. Back after this.
Holiday in-depth coverage on KSL News Radio.
Welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. Happy Juneteenth to all of you. And as you heard on that rejoin, we're celebrating the newest federal holiday here on the program here on Cougar Sports Saturday, discussing, you know, BYU and their history with race and hearing from players and coaches about what Juneteenth means to them. And Matt, on days like today, it kind of gives us opportunities to reflect and maybe think of what we can do in our communities to help improve, amplify the voices and race relations in our state, in our communities. And we discussed that with one of BYU's most notable players.
Yeah, Tyler Algier, we caught up with him on media day, and we were able to ask him, what can we do in our communities to improve things? And here's what Tyler had to say.
Yeah, so honestly, I don't know, it's just kind of like a me thing, but, you know, obviously just like instead of, because there's a lot of, I don't know, I just feel like there's a lot of staring, whether it's, oh, he's on the football team or not, but like, obviously, because I could be the only one walking in a crowd, and he's literally the only color guy or minority there, so, you know, obviously, honestly, just saying hi or whatever, it's just, instead of just like that hard little mean mug stare, because, you know, in California you do that, that's a fate on sight. So but obviously a lot of people are different, and there's a lot of people that actually say hi, and that's what I really like about Utah. You know, obviously there's some people, but then a majority of them are actually really nice.
Yeah, and last thing for you, Tyler, you know, race relations have taken on a national conversation the past year, and I think it's a good thing. And I know that in the BYU program, Isaiah Heron was once considering going to an HBCU. Maybe just, and he came back, but maybe just within the program and you guys, what do you guys look to do maybe with your platform to want to showcase yourself and your family and your history and what that means, but just what the program represents and things like that is to maybe break down stereotypes with BYU football and the school.
Yeah, so obviously we have a 70% of our team is white, and you know the other 30% is either Polynesian or other minority race. But you know, it's just a home environment. You know, obviously race does not matter in the BYU football team for sure. And you know, all of us can just do our thing. But you know, obviously there's a lot of, like, for example, Isaiah Heron pushed when the Black Lives Matter came out, he pushed that so hard. You know, obviously just having those guys doing that, and I think would push our platform and every other platform to the max.
What do you feel Juneteenth means to you?
It's honestly a reminder that obviously there's a lot of injustices still coming, but you know, obviously that was the start of a new beginning. You know, obviously there's a lot of injustices still coming, but you know, we still have to push forward and strive for
equality.
That's awesome. Well, man, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts and being candid with us. We really appreciate that. And here at KSL, we want to use our platform to share your guys' message and your voice. So we appreciate you hopping on again with us.
No, I appreciate you.
That was BYU star running back Tyler Allgeier. And I loved what he said, because sometimes when you think about these things, you wonder, what exactly can I do? And it might seem too daunting. But really, being friendly, saying hello, seeing Tyler, saying, Tyler Allgeier, you're the man. Love watching you at BYU. That goes a long way. I loved hearing what he had to say, Mitch.
Yeah, I mean, it resonated with me. Just something so simple like don't stare. Like, that just resonates. You know, like, you know, sometimes I think, as you said, you put it best, you know, sometimes it can be daunting where you hear, like, you know, is it, people might be nervous about activism causes, but just something simple like don't stare at someone that has a different skin color. Like, it's simple. And, you know, BYU over the years has had guys like Jarrell Guilford come for the program. And I remember back in the day when Margin Hooks signed with BYU, and they would state things like that happened on campus. But over time, I feel like things are improving. There's always room to continue to grow. And I think that's why here on KSL News Radio, we want to share these stories that, you know, players experience this sort of thing, and there's always room to improve. And someone like Tyler Allgeier, who you're going to see a lot this fall, toting the rock for BYU and having a lot of success, you know, he's just a normal guy. Doesn't want to be stared at. And I think that was just cool to hear Tyler open up his experience with him or with us and share what Juneteenth holiday means to him. Also, we caught up with BYU head football coach Kalani Sitake, and you heard a lot from him earlier today in the program. But Kalani gave us what he feels what Juneteenth means to him, because, you know, Kalani, he's the first ever Tongan head football coach, and he has created a program, Matt, that has so much diversity in the program. I mean, you know, I looked at, you know, when he was at Utah, it was a lot of 33% white, 33% Polynesian, 33% black. I mean, it was really one of the more diverse rosters in all of college football. I feel like Kalani's brought that to BYU more and more. It's still not, you know, even all across the board, but it's a lot more diverse than where it was years ago. And this is what Kalani Sitake had to say on what Juneteenth means to him.
Well, the simplest thing is that just look at what they want to do individually and as a team. The Love One Another campaign, We Are One, last year was special. But I think it's important for us as coaches, and I'm really thankful for our administration and Upper Campus, from our president to our vice president to our athletic director on down, their commitment to helping people and allowing people to feel included. You know, that's a big part of this movement, is to help people feel loved. And so, but an important part of that is collaborating with the young people and hearing their thoughts and even their frustrations, and letting them air it out and having communication. I think it's important to talk to them about that. And it doesn't always have to be with me, but the conversation shouldn't be something that's uncomfortable. And the more we can try to encourage others to communicate, and then good things can happen. And even if it's not agreeing, it's okay. But as long as you keep talking, communicating with each other, if you don't, then usually it's replaced with negativity, right? So, I mean, if your wife texts you in the morning at 8 a.m. and you don't answer back till 5 p.m., it's not usually going to be a positive thing for you. So people can understand that. So imagine if there's times where the players don't feel comfortable to express their thoughts or frustrations or concerns. And I'm just thankful that at BYU, there's always an open door policy. People are listening, from the administration, Upper Campus, all the way down to athletic administration. And for the most, you know, if you're looking at it, our fan base is very loving and encouraging to our players. And so we have a high number of people from different backgrounds that feel really comfortable here, whether they're part of the church, members of the church or not. They feel really comfortable here and love their time being here and at the school, and they love the fan base. And I think the more we can encourage, especially when the pandemic happened, no one was allowed to connect and communicate and really see each other face to face. Now we're in a different time where that can really take place. Our players felt the love when there wasn't an ability to connect, you know. So imagine how it's going to feel when we get to the stadium and we get to go against, you take the field against Arizona and Las Vegas. It's going to be a lot of fun. But I'm just really thankful for opportunities to learn, and being a minority myself, just to have others learn from my experience and I can learn from theirs. This is an opportunity for all of us to get better and learn and really love one another and try to follow Christ and be better disciples.
That was the head coach of BYU, Kalani Sitake. And Mitch, it's been a joy today talking BYU sports, especially on this new federal holiday, Juneteenth, getting to hear from minority players and coaches and what we can do to improve race relations and just be better in our communities. It's been a joy to hear from them and be a part of the program today.
Yeah, love that commentary from Kalani. You know, the Love One Another campaign resonated with so many, and I think that's one of the great things that we can all carry on in our lives, love one another, and I think that's one of the beautiful things. And I love that Juneteenth now is a federal holiday, and it's a great way to share these voices of men in the BYU football program about their experiences at BYU. So I had a lot of fun doing this at BYU Media Day and sharing that with all of you today.
We'll say so long here from Cougar Sports Saturday as we continue to celebrate Juneteenth. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte, Dave Meek, and Bordop, and producer Dallin Graff. Thanks. Have a wonderful holiday, Juneteenth. And we'll see you next week.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.